enjoy it while it lasts. Gambling gods, fickle bunch.
Oh, yeah.
So easily offended.
Here comes the money. Here we go. Money talks. Here comes the money.
The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks starts now.
What's up? What's up? It is Weekend Wager here on 98.7 ESPN. With you for the next 2 hours. Brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. Phone lines are open. 800-919-3776. What do we have coming your way the next 2 hours to help you win some money this weekend? Well, we've got quite a lot. Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News is going to be joining us in about 30 minutes. We'll dive into the Knicks and the Nets. As we know, the Knicks, 1 o'clock. Both on Saturday and Sunday, they play the Charlotte Hornets tomorrow at 1 o'clock right here on 98.7 ESPN, and you can listen to them on Sunday as well against Boston. They need to win both. I'm sure they're hoping that Atlanta, who's taking on Houston, will lose on Sunday. Not so sure that's going to happen. But listen, you know, the Knicks are in the driver's seat here. They win both. And then, of course, you've got Miami. They're 38-31. They take on the Bucks tomorrow and the Detroit Pistons on Sunday. So, you know, the Knicks still have an opportunity to land that number four seed. And, of course, I'm sure a lot of Knicks fans out there would love to see that, because you'd love to see the Knicks host the first round of the playoffs. We'll see if that can happen or not. Unfortunately, you know, I think that, not that I think, I believe that overtime loss to the Lakers really was the thorn in the side of potentially that happening. I'm not anticipating them to do that, but you never know. Like I said, like Atlanta really, just to solidify the deal, needs to lose to Houston, and chances are that's not going to be the case. I'll be surprised if Houston plays any of their starters. And then, of course, you've got the Nets who are trying to land that number one seed, but where it stands right now, and I'm calling up the score. I know we just got the update, the SportsCenter update, but I mean, listen, it's 9 minutes left in the fourth, and the 76ers are up by 30 points against Orlando. So pretty much that seals the deal. The 76ers are going to have the number one seed heading into the postseason. You've got the Nets. They take on Chicago tomorrow, and Chicago they're playing for a lot. You know, it's very different when you've already made it into the postseason, and chances are you, as right now, what we're anticipating, because the 76ers are up by 29 points, that the Nets really don't have a chance, or do not have a chance of landing that number one seed. So, you know, how do they proceed the next two games? You know, keep in mind, and I know we talk about this a lot here on the station, and that is that the big three, and that would be KD, Kyrie, and Harden, have not played together in more than seven games. So, you know, do the Nets use these next two games against Chicago and Cleveland to kind of work on that chemistry, work on that vibe, work on that ebb and flow to this team heading into the postseason? I think that would be advantageous for them. We'll see what they do. So we will dive into the Knicks and the Nets with Christian Winfield, of course, again, from the New York Daily News. Also, David Berman, good friend of mine, oversees all our gambling content at ESPN up in Bristol, will be joining me at the top of the hour at 11 o'clock. We've got the Byron Nelson that's taking place right now, so we'll have some golf picks for you. And we will dive into some NBA plays for you as well. And then tomorrow, the second leg of the Triple Crown, which is the Preakness, Mark DiLorenzo joins us from GiddyUpBets.com. He's the founder and, of course, the racing analyst. And so he will join us around 11:30 tonight to break down the Preakness. Who are the horses that he likes heading into tomorrow? Again, we are our sole purpose here on 98.7 ESPN every Friday night from 10 to midnight is to try to help you win some money. With that being said, I want to spend the first 30 minutes, because we are going to get into some NBA. Obviously, we're going to get into some golf. And like I said, we're going to get into some Preakness. And I do want to open up the phone lines, 800-919-3776. I want to spend the first 30 minutes, or where we're at right now, 23 minutes, talking about the NFL, and as we know, big week this week, NFL schedule release, had a big show on ESPN Plus with Daily Wager. We were on for 2 hours, commercial free, going back and forth between us, the Daily Wager crew, as well as the ESPN Fantasy Football crew, with Stefania Bell and Field Yates and Matthew Barry. And we talked about in regard to the schedule and its release, as well as week one. Not only that, not only are week one lines out, week one lines are out, week two lines are out, Thanksgiving Day lines are out. It's amazing what you can bet on already. And so I do want to dive into that. So let's start here in our own backyard in regard to the Jets, right? And probably the one game that pops out to me more than anything else is the fact that the NFL could be so cruel. the Jets and Zach Wilson have to travel to Carolina and take on the Carolina Panthers and Sam Darnold in week one. Are you kidding me? And this line is at four and a half in some places. Hashtag run, don't walk. Hashtag jump all over this. Understand how this is going to play out, because it's not just Sam Darnold. It's Robbie Anderson as well. And there's three other Jets players that are on that Carolina Panthers roster. Okay. So, you know, they're going to be playing with extra motivation. You know, at by that time, Sam Darnold it will have really won that locker room over. You're going to have a lot of guys on that roster that are going to be playing not just for themselves, not just for week one, not just for the Carolina Panthers, not just for the sake that they're trying to, you know, upset the apple cart that Tom Brady is walking around with. This is going to be a revenge game for Sam Darnold. And the fact that this is only four is astounding to me. So like I said, hashtag run, don't walk. And I'm not saying that Zach Wilson very well couldn't end up being something sensational. And I really hope the young man does, because he seems like a really, really nice young guy. But again, I will repeat myself. BYU, subpar competition, subpar comp. 1 year of impressive football play in a COVID environment where there were a number of top players who opted out of college. So I think that he's going to be a work in progress. In looking at the over-under, I want to say that the over-under win total for the Jets is at 6 or 6.5, something like that. I looked at this roster and, I think the Jets are lucky to win 4 games. Unfortunately, on top, let me I want to focus on this Carolina game first. Okay. Again, Zach Wilson, to expect him to be ready to head to Carolina and take on the Carolina Panthers game one, I think is asking a lot, especially with his lack of experience in what he's coming into the NFL with. Meanwhile, Sam Darnold, what does he get? He gets an upgrade in regard to the head coaching position with Matt Rhule. I love Matt Rhule. He's got a phenomenal offensive coordinator in Joe Brady. Like I said, he reunites with Robbie Anderson, which I don't feel was utilized fully to his fullest capacity here in New York. He's got Christian McCaffrey, who's coming in healthy. He's got DJ Moore as his other wide receiver. Are you kidding me? And on top of that, defensively, they drafted JC Horn. Now they're going to be able to play a lot more press man coverage against what wide receiving core? Denzel Mims? Crowder, Corey Davis. Okay. With all due respect, none of those guys really scare me. And on top of that, Carolina, I felt Carolina had a really, really phenomenal draft. They drafted wide receiver Terrence Marshall. This is a wide receiver that you can line up anywhere. He could play the X, he could play the Y, he could play the Z, you could put him anywhere. And I know Matt Rhule. I know how his mind works offensively. I think he's going to do some phenomenal things with Terrence Marshall. Some people say that Terrence Marshall will end up being a better wide receiver than Jefferson with the Minnesota Vikings. Just marinating that for a minute. Then they get tight end Trimble, who a number of people think is the next Kittle in the NFL. Okay, we'll see. And then they also draft running back Chuba Hubbard, who many feel very well could end up being the best running back selected this year. Keep in mind, he was the best running back in 2019. Also, if you look at the Carolina Panthers' record last year, they had six games that they lost by only one score. By only one score. So the fact that this is... Carolina is only favored by four is just like, it's astounding to me. I've already put a ton of money on this game. I think this is going to be a complete blowout. We're here in the business only to try to help you win some money. Hashtag run, don't walk. Get on that right now, because I'll tell you what, as we get closer to week one, that line's going to probably drop to 6.5, maybe 7.5 at kickoff. So get it right now while you can get it at 4 under. In regards to the Jets, their over-under is at 6.5 wins. I've got them winning 4 games this season. And looking at their schedule, don't believe they win at Carolina. Then they have to take on Bill Belichick and the Patriots. Yeah, good luck with that rookie quarterback. Bill Belichick owns them, which is really interesting. Now, unfortunately, Zach Wilson has to take on Bill Belichick and the Patriots twice in a matter of 6 weeks. Wow. And then they're at Denver, Mile High, week 3. Yeah, you're not going to be able to breathe up there. So pack your own oxygen tank, please. And there's a chance that, oh, by the way, Aaron Rodgers might be the starting quarterback. Then against the Tennessee Titans. I'm not big on the Tennessee Titans. That might be the first game 4 weeks in. I like Robert Saleh. I mean, could that be a close game? I don't know. I still have them as a loss, but Tennessee lost a lot this season because of the salary cap issues. So I have it as a loss, but I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know. At that point in time, I don't know. Did the Jets surprise some folks? Possibly. Then week 5, they're taking on Atlanta, but in London. It's really hard. A rookie staff, knowing the intricacies and how to travel to London, it's tough for a rookie head coach and a rookie staff to win in London. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on the Atlanta Falcons, and I think they drafted the best player in this draft in Kyle Pitts. So then a bye, then they take on Bill Belichick and the Patriots again. Oh my gosh, in New England. And then week 8, they're home against Cincinnati. Now, here's the thing. I don't believe that Joe Burrow is going to start the season as a starting quarterback, just because I don't believe his knee is going to be 100% and be ready. But by week 8, Joe Burrow is going to be back in the saddle. Now, I gave the Jets this game to win, but if Joe Burrow is a starting quarterback, no bueno. I don't think so. Then they're at Indy now that they have Carson Wentz, and I'm a big believer in Carson Wentz. They improved in free agency as well in the draft. I like the Colts. I think the Colts win there. Then they have to go up against two really tough defenses, Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins. Wow. Here's a game that I do have them winning at Houston. Who's going to be the starting quarterback? I don't believe that it will be Deshaun Watson. That's good news for the Jets. And then they go up against the Philadelphia Eagles. So week 12 and week 13, could that be a two-week stretch where the Jets end up winning two games, possibly? Okay. I'm in. I've given that. So right now, I feel that I'm being very optimistic with this Jets team and this Jets schedule, and I've got them winning 3 games by week 13. Okay? And then they take on the Saints? Nope. Then they take on, they're at Miami? Nope. Then week 16, they're against the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday at 1:00. Okay. You know what? Again, I'm going to be optimistic. I feel kind of kind tonight. I'm going to say, okay, week 16, why not? Let's give it to the Jets. So those are the 4 games that I think that they have a chance of winning. Home against Cincinnati, at Houston, home against the Eagles, and home against Jacksonville. Those are the 4 games that I have the Jets winning. Then they finish off the season against the Bucs and at Buffalo, 2 of the best defenses in the NFL. Again, no bueno. Let's focus in on what's going on in our own backyard in regard to the Knicks and the Nets. Joining us, Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News. Christian, let's dive into that. Let's dive into this. You've got the Knicks right now. They're 39-31. They still have 2 games Both you'll be able to listen to right here on 98.7 ESPN on Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock. One against Charlotte, the other one against Boston. Atlanta takes on Houston on Sunday. Miami takes on the Bucks and Detroit. What do you feel the chances are for the Knicks to secure that fourth seed so that they can host the first round of the playoffs?
You know, it's tough because the Knicks have a difficult role for these last two games. I mean, yes, the Celtics don't have Jaylen Brown, but Jason Tatum is enough to will a team to a win on his own. And the Hornets are playing really, really good basketball. I love what James Borrego's been able to do, and LaMelo Ball's return has kind of given that team a jump start. So, you know, it's going to be a tough road. All these teams want to win. If you're in the mix between that 1 and 10 seed, even if you're a little bit below 10, like the Bulls are trying to fight up and secure the 11th, the 10th seed, it's tough. But at the same time, Julius Randle is playing out of his mind. I mean, we're seeing the guy shoot sidestep three, step back three, things that you never would have thought he would be doing if you looked at him play a couple years ago. RJ Barrett's been amazing. The Knicks are rolling. This is the best type of basketball I've seen in terms of the entire season that I've seen in New York for quite some time. And these next two games, I think they're going to be tough. But as we've seen from this team, Tom Thibodeau's got these guys really in really good game shape, and they're out there playing on both ends. So I think we're going to see two good games. And I think the Knicks have a good chance to win both of them, honestly.
Yeah, and again, they're going to need to. They're sitting again at 39-31. Atlanta's 40-31. Miami is 39-31. So this very well can come down to the Sunday. Again, Atlanta taking on Houston, and then the Knicks taking on Boston, right, and of course Miami taking on Detroit. So Sunday's going to be a lot of fun. You mentioned Julius Randle.
Yeah.
What a season, man. One team's trash is another team's treasure. Really unbelievable, you know, how he landed here in New York, averaging 24 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists a game, shooting 41% from downtown. And in my opinion, I know this has been reported. I mean, I'm not breaking news here, not considering myself a big NBA analyst or anything, but you know, what do you feel changed in regard to the shot selection we saw from Julius Randle and this Knicks team? And I felt, you know, we talked so much about what great defense they were playing, but really offensively, they really turned it around when they started taking shots from downtown.
Right. You know, this goes back to, you know, and obviously I cover the Nets, but I've had the liberty to, I've had the pleasure to be at Madison Square Garden for a couple of these games and ask Tom Thibodeau about these developments. And, you know, Julius Randle kind of came in, he said, and set the tone from training camp of just his approach to improving his three-point shot, improving his conditioning, improving everything. And as you can see, the Knicks, across the board, they're shooting much better from three this year than they have in previous years. And that's just a testament to what Tom Thibodeau has been able to do in terms of just really establishing that culture. But even just beyond the three-point shooting that Julius Randle has had, I think the thing that sticks out to me the most is his decision-making when the double team comes, because we know that teams are going to send doubles. You're not going to be able to guard Julius Randle one-on-one. He's just too quick, too strong. He's going to bully his way through you to the paint. But when that double team comes, he is making the right pass, and he's trusting in his teammates to hit those threes, and they're knocking them down. So I think this Knicks team has just been riding a roller coaster of confidence that's just been going up all season long, from guys hitting threes, from guys trusting each other, from guys hustling for the 50-50 balls. I mean, they're playing incredible basketball. And yes, you do have to hit those threes, but you have to have players who know and trust to swing the ball around to the open man. And that's what the Knicks are playing. This is, like I said, I don't know how many times I'm going to say this season, but the Knicks are playing some of the best basketball that I've seen them play in this city for quite some time. And to your point, yeah, it's because they've been able to knock down those threes and also trust in the pass. You know, there's no one that's really trying to go out there and play ISO ball all game long. You know, there's no one that's really trying to think about me. No, it's about the team in New York, and it's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, and it's the role players, right? Like RJ Barrett,
right.
You know, Derrick Rose coming back and reuniting with Tibbs, and listen, you know, again, this is a gambling show. We can wager here on 98.7 ESPN. you know, I've been making a ton of money with Bullock, that's for sure. For whatever reason, odds.
Yeah,
odds makers have really, you know, his point total per game odds makers, for whatever reason, have it pretty low. So, and just before we move on to the Nets, I just want to, interesting bet that's out there right now in regard to the Knicks in the postseason. We all know they're going to make it to the postseason. You can bet that they're going to lose in the first round, and that's minus 200. That's a lot of juice. Listen, you just said it. You haven't seen the Knicks play this good of basketball in a long time. You can wager that they will make it through the first round of the playoffs and lose in the second round of the playoffs, the semifinals, at plus 165. Plus one, so you're laying $100 down to win $165. You know what? I'll throw some coin on that. Just because of what you said as well, Christian. I mean, let's be honest, we haven't, you never know. Crazier things have happened. You know, we haven't seen them play this well in a long time. So anyway, that's the bet that I would make, and that's out there right now. You know, the minus 200, that's a lot of juice for them to lose in the first round. Why the heck not? Put a little coin on them losing in the second round and cheer them on.
Here's what I might add to that. If the Knicks lose their final two games, and this is just hypothetical, if they lose their final two games, and if the Nets lose one of their last two games, the Nets will be the third seed and the Knicks will be the sixth. And that's the first round matchup between the Knicks and the Nets, and I think we all want to see that. However, if you're betting on the Knicks now to lose their first round, to win their first round series and lose in the second round, and now you've got a Knicks-Nets first round series, I don't know how confident you're going to be in that bet.
Oh, it's bananas. Christian Winfield is joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You can see all his work on the New York Daily News, and he's on with Larry Hardesty quite often here on 98.7 ESPN. All right, let's turn our attention to the Nets, okay? And they've got two more games, Saturday against Chicago, Sunday against Cleveland. Obviously, while we're on right now, the 76ers are taking on Orlando. They take them on again on Sunday at 7 o'clock. I anticipate the Nets to finish as the two seed. That's where I see them. I'm curious, how do you see this playing out between them and the 76ers?
It's gonna be tough. I think number one, Philly's gonna win both of those games against the Magic. I believe, you know, the Magic are what, 14th in the East. I don't see a way, and they just traded Vucevic and Aaron Gordon. I don't see them beating the Sixers in any of these two games. But as we've seen, crazy things have happened. The Nets, on the other hand. I believe I mentioned the Bulls earlier. The Bulls have to win. If the Bulls lose against the Nets, they're eliminated from the playoffs. It's over. There's nothing they could do. So they have to win that game, and I think that creates a little bit more of a sense of urgency on Chicago's side than it does for the Nets. You know, Steve Nash just spoke earlier today, and he said, you know, while we would like to have the second seed, yes, we want to have that, we're prioritized on being healthy and on building that chemistry because, as we know, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving have only played 6.5 games as a trio leading into tomorrow. So it's going to be interesting. I think the Bulls are going to bring it. But at the same time, you've got KD, Kyrie, and James, and it's like your favorites no matter who you're playing against with those guys on the floor. So I'm not necessarily worried. After that, you've got the Cavaliers who, I mean, call a spade, they're also not a playoff team, even though they got the Nets twice earlier this season in back-to-back games. I think one of those games, Colin Sexton scored 42 points, and it went into overtime. So, like I said, crazy things could happen. The Cavs could come out and win. The Bulls could come out and win. But I think ultimately, as you mentioned, this is going to come down between there's three teams, in my opinion. It's a three-team race for Eastern Conference champion. That's the Sixers, the Nets, and the Bucks. I think every other team is a level below, a notch below those three teams. And the Nets, unfortunately, are going to have to play two of them. That's what happens when you don't lock up the first seed. They've got a second-round matchup that's basically written in pen against the Bucks at this point. And as long as the Sixers handle business, we're going to see a Nets-Sixers conference finals or a Bucks-Sixers conference finals, depending on who comes out of that series. So it's going to be a tough matchup. I don't think the Nets have an answer for a Joel Embiid type of player, at least not a single matchup. They're going to have to do that by committee, by team. And what happens when you defend a guy by committee is that somebody else ends up open. So that's going to be the chess match that we see in a series between Brooklyn and Philly. I'm personally very excited for that matchup. I think that's going to be the most exciting matchup in the entire Eastern Conference playoffs. And I just can't wait. There's going to be a lot of trolling between Kevin Durant and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and James Harden and all these guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. I wish I could press fast forward and get there.
Christian, what's the latest with Kyrie's face?
Oh, that's a good question. So, obviously, we all know Kyrie took that elbow to the face when he was trying to grab a rebound. Nikola Vucevic got him pretty good. He was actually cleared to play against the Spurs. But, you know, precautionary measures, they figure it's not necessary to throw him in there. He's also clear to play these two games coming up. I anticipate him being available for both, even though we know the Nets have, you know, the philosophy with their stars in terms of back-to-backs and load management. So we don't know who's going to play in that second game against the Cavaliers, but we do know everybody is available to play against the Bulls. The fixed injury was a little bit concerning for Kyrie because if you remember when he first signed that contract in Brooklyn, he didn't even get to play in training camp or in preseason until the last game because he took a shot to the face in a pickup game, orbital fracture that kept him out maybe a little bit over a month. So that was a little bit concerning because of how he went down and just his mannerisms and how hurt he was. He was punching the floor a little bit. But it seems he's okay. It seems like everybody's okay for the most part in Brooklyn, which is kind of weird and interesting and new because it seems like all season nobody's been healthy. It's like somebody goes down, somebody else comes back. Oh, wait, now somebody else is going down. Now somebody else is out with COVID. It's crazy. But this Nets team is healthy for once, right? And Kyrie is at the center of it.
Absolutely. Just to share some wagers, futures, bets out there for you. NBA championship, Nets are favored to win it. That's right, Christian. 2-1.
Wow.
Bucks plus 750. The Lakers 4-1. Obviously, you know, they've got some issues of their own. The 76ers plus 750. The Clippers plus 550. The Suns, wow, what Chris Paul's been able to do. 14-1. The Jazz, I like them as well. 7-1. Denver 35-1. The Mavs 40-1. As well as the Miami Heat 40-1. So the Nets favored right now to win the NBA championship. And again, just a second ago, like I shared with you in regard to the futures bets for the Knicks, for the Nets, if you think there's a chance they can lose in the first round, it's plus 375. That's not where I would go. You could bet that they're going to lose in the second round in the semifinals at plus 280. And then you could bet that they're going to lose in the conference finals at plus 450. If you do not feel that they're going to advance to the championship, let alone win it at 2-1, just to give you some odds out there. So what's your gut? Let's end on this. What's your gut telling you? You think, you know, you've got these big three, right? They've only played seven games together this season. What's your gut telling you, Christian? Do you think the Nets are going to win it this year?
You know, when you say that they're 2-1 favorites to win the championship, I think that's what you said. Correct me if I'm wrong. You know, my mind immediately goes back to watching them play on April 10th against the defending champions, against the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers did not have LeBron James or Anthony Davis for that game, but they beat the Nets by 25 when the Nets had Kyrie and KD. Why? Because all the other guys on that team have played together for the most part, and they went through a championship season last year where they had the ups and downs of building chemistry and learning what it takes to play with each other, learning what it takes to play with guys in and out of the lineup. And after that game, I wrote that, hey, the Nets just learned what a championship contender looks like, because that's what a team should operate like, whether their players, whether their stars are on the floor or not. They need to be crisp. They need to be committed to defense. They need to be executing on both ends of the floor. And the Nets have not been that all year. They haven't been. They have not been good on defense except recently. And honestly, if you ask me, I don't think that this is a defensive Nets team. I think the Nets are going to be somebody that has to outgun their opponent because, you know, when you're in the playoffs, you're going to start falling back into some of your bad habits. And unfortunately, a lack of effort on the defensive end has been a bad habit that the Nets have had it basically the entire season for different spurts. So I think there is still a lot of road to make up in terms of just building that, what do you call it, cohesion, chemistry, connectivity for so many guys that haven't really played together. I think that's where other teams have an edge. Teams like the Lakers, teams like the Bucks and the Sixers that have been together for quite some time and are just now starting to hit their stride. That's where, and the Nets have spoken about this. Steve Nash, James Harden, all these guys have talked. They've said, you know, yeah, other teams have, you know, that common history of playing together for so often. We're brand new. We're still trying to figure this out. But even though they're still trying to figure this out, you're figuring it out with, what, three Hall of Famers, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving leading you to the promised land. So, I mean, I think it's you know, first and second round. First round is going to be easy, in my opinion, because that's just, okay, we can lean on our talent to get through that. That second round against the Bucks is not a given. You can get bounced in the second round. You went to Milwaukee, yes, without James Harden. And I think that's where the Nets are right now. You go to Milwaukee. Jeff Green was speaking about this earlier. They weren't necessarily too concerned or hanging their heads after losing two in Milwaukee because, number one, they didn't have James Harden for those games. And number two, those games came down to the final minute. Could have been decided if the shot goes here or there. The Nets could have won those two games. So it's interesting. I do feel like there's still a little bit of gap for the Nets to close in terms of building that chemistry that we saw on April 10th when the Lakers blew them out by 25 without LeBron or AD. But I think eventually you get there because what do you have, a week of practice for the play-in tournament. You've got a first round against a lesser opponent that you should be able to handle. And then you're going against a Bucks team that you learned a lot in those two back-to-back matchups, but they didn't necessarily learn a lot about you because you haven't had your guys together. And I'll wrap it up by saying this. I think that's something that the Nets can use to their advantage. They've played so many different opponents with so many different variations, and they've had, what, 35, maybe 35 different starting lineups at this point of the season. But they haven't really had all their weapons. They haven't been at full strength all year. Think about it. Spencer Dinwiddie went down in the third game, and now he's talking about maybe he could come back for the conference final. So you never know. I think, yes, this team has as good a chance to win it as anybody, but I do think that they still have to make it up in terms of, you know, building that chemistry. And until we see that on the floor, it's really hard for me personally to bet against a guy like LeBron who's done it year in and year out and is now running it back with the same guys he had last year.
I understand, you know, LeBron does LeBron, but LeBron hasn't been LeBron because of, you know, the injuries and whatnot that he's been dealing with and AD as well. So I'm fading the Lakers. I'll take a chance on the Nets 2-1. Let's be honest. You've got that big three. You've got Kyrie, you've got KD, you've got Harden on the court. Who's going to beat them? Really, the only team that's going to beat them is themselves in regard to not being able to stay healthy or not gelling or whatever the case may be when they get into the postseason. So getting the Nets 2-1, I don't think, I don't think those are some bad odds. Anyway, that was Christian Winfield joining us here on 98.7 ESPN and Week in Wager. First time on the show with me. I know he's on with Larry Hardesty quite a bit, and really enjoyed my interview with him. We come back, we kick off hour two, and David Berman is going to join us. He oversees all of our gambling content at ESPN. We'll dive into what's going on right now in regards to the wide, wide world of golf. You got the AT&T Byron Nelson taking place in Texas, TPC at Craig Ranch. And you've got Sam Burns at the top of the leaderboard right now at 17 under. He shot a 62 today. Can we just marinate in that for a minute? You imagine shooting a 62. I'm over the moon when I shoot a 79. That's every time I tee it up. I mean, granted, I'm comparing apples and oranges here. I know that. But I'm just saying, like, man, I go through the roof if I just break 80. This dude shot a 62 today. Gosh, I can't even imagine. Anyway, we will dive into the Byron Nelson again, getting you ready, hopefully helping you win some money heading into tomorrow morning. So stay tuned for that. We'll also continue to talk some NBA. And Mark DiLorenzo from GiddyUpBets.com, founder and racing analyst, is going to be joining us in about 30 minutes to get you ready for the Preakness Stage 2 of the Triple Crown. And a lot of drama, as we know, surrounding that race. So still a lot more coming your way. Another hour here on Week in Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports, 98.7 ESPN. Nita Marks with you again. It is Week in Wager, hour two, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. Without further ado, David Berman joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. He oversees all our gambling content on ESPN. David, good evening. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'd be better if Luca wasn't... I said I'd be better if Luca wasn't one of eight from downtown.
Well, the song you played to lead us in, If I Had $1 Million, good song, I'd love $1 Million. But I think that needs to be updated, maybe like $10 or $11 million. You know, with $1 million, we blow right through that with all of our NBA and golf bets.
Yes, we certainly would. But you can catch all our columns. David oversees all our columns. We've got two NBA columns that hit ESPN.com every week. Our Preakness column is up there right now. Bear and I have some plays. So funny. You and Eddie Marlette, who produces Daily Wager, you guys are like, oh, I don't want anything to do with horse racing. I don't get, like, and it's so funny because Bear and I will send, like, hey, this is the exacta box. This is the trifecta box. Eddie will come back to us and say, I don't want that. Just tell me who's going to win. Well, that's not how you win money in horse racing. It's not always who's going to win, because you're not going to get great odds, right? Like, anyway, it's funny. But we've got two NBA columns that hit every week. We've got a Preakness column that's up there right now. So make sure you check out ESPN.com.
And we have a Stanley Cup playoff preview coming out tomorrow with Greg Wasinski and Doug Kazarian and Emily Kaplan tomorrow. Our Stanley Cup preview will be out. Just actually read it over a few minutes ago, so it'll be out tomorrow morning.
Look at you, fancy pants. So I just share the Luka stat with him because I shared the Luka stat with him because I liked Dallas minus 13.5. I like Porzingis over 17 points. He's got 21 right now. But also one of my prop plays was Luka over 2.5 threes, and he's 1 of 8 tonight. So he's not my friend anymore. Anyway. Let's take a look at what's going on with the Byron Nelson. You've been kicking butt and taking names when it comes to golf, my friend. And before we dive into that conversation, let's just let our listeners know what's going on at the top of the leaderboard. Sam Burns is up at the top of the leaderboard, 17 under. He's got a 2-shot lead. Who are some of the guys that I like following him? I like Lee. I like Ortiz. I like Schwartzel. I like Kuchar. I like Kisri. I like Spieth. Don't sleep. I know DeChambeau is really far away. It was 6 under. But I just don't underestimate DeChambeau, who could put something really special together and make a big move on Saturday to put him into contention to seriously make a run to win this. But nonetheless, Burns, like I said, top of the leaderboard, 65 on Thursday, 62 today. You can bet that he's going to win it at plus 163. I think that's pretty good money right there. I like Burns coming into this thing.
Yeah, he played well today. That was a hell of a back nine watching him today. He played outstanding on that back and getting birdies in six of the last 8 holes. To go out there with a 10 under 62. You mentioned Bryson. I know me, you, and the Bear were all over Bryson this week, and I still think he legitimately had a shot with about 4 holes to play. He was not that far back. Then he goes bogey, bogey, and he hits the green in 2 on the par 5, 18th hole. Can't get up and down for birdie. Got the par, which was might as well be a bogey when you're talking about Bryson driving the green in 2 on a par 5. So he wound up losing 2 shots overall, and it kind of felt like 3, and Burns did the opposite and went birdie birdie to finish. So that's kind of like a 4 or 5 shot swing, and now he's down 10. So he's 10 out of the lead when he could have been about 6 back, would have been safe to say, if he doesn't go bogey bogey par finish. So he's probably not going to win it. I do like him to have a backdoor top 10 and pay us off. We all took him in the top 10 as well, but I mean, Sam Burns, you saw the note from ESPN's Ryan Mulicki today in the SID Golf Channel, looking to become only the 3rd golfer in the last 25 years to have his first 2 wins be in consecutive starts since he won 2 weeks ago and he took last week off. The guy's playing outstanding. You got to tip his cap to him. You mentioned a whole bunch of guys that are behind him. I took Carl Schwartzel in our column. I have him in DraftKings, the Daily Fantasy, and I also still like him to contend here. I know he's 6 back. He's with about 7 other golfers at 11 under par, playing really, really well. I like him to be a serious contender this weekend as well. And you can't sleep on Spieth. He's really the only one in the top 10 right now that has, you know, done anything in the last couple of weeks besides Burns. So I think, you know, you can't really sleep on him.
No, so I'm just going to throw out some bets tonight. As soon as the show's over at midnight, I'm going to head over a few, I don't know, 45 steps away is my bedroom. I'm typically wired at the end of the night after I host a show. It's kind of impossible to go to sleep after you host a show, you know, because your juices are flowing because you've just done Sports Talk Radio. And so here are the bets that I'm going to put in tonight, probably around 12:15 in the morning. Like I said, I'm going to put some money down on Burns to win it plus 163. I liked him coming in. I like Lee. I won a lot of money today on Lee in the match play event. I put money down on him. I like him to finish in the top five at plus 175. You mentioned Schwartzel. You can get him to finish in the top five at 3-1. Spieth, you can get him to finish in the top five at plus 125. You can get him to finish in the top 10 at plus 120. I also like Kuchar to finish in the top 10 at plus 110. And I like Kisri to finish in the top 10 at 2-1. So those are some of the plays that I'm going to put money down on that I'm expecting these guys to at least finish in the next 2 days. Any of those bets that I just mentioned to you tickle your fancy?
I like the Spieth ones, of course, and obviously I mentioned Schwartzel a few minutes ago. Kuchar's an interesting one because he's had a couple of good rounds this year. He played very well in the match play, but he hasn't really contended in any stroke play event. But he's sitting there right now at minus 11. I can see him finishing in the top five. The one that really surprised me, because you haven't heard his name a lot this year, you heard him last year, Doc Redmond is showing up at, you know, minus 13 right now. I don't know. I haven't played Lee. I think I do like your bet there, but I'd keep an eye on Schwartzel. I like Carlos Ortiz as well. And if you're going to go further down, this is a course that Snedeker's played well in the last 2 days. He's played very well in the last three or four tournaments. I took him in daily fantasy, and I almost took him in the column. He's put together a good, really good 3 or 4 weeks, so I could see Brent Snedeker sneaking into the top 10, if not top five as well.
I like that one. Again, David Behrman joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, oversees all our gambling content at ESPN. All right, looking at some of the matchups that I'm going to play. Zalatoris over Decky. I faded Decky coming in. And in the column, I mentioned my best bet was Spieth over Decky to finish on Sunday. And sure enough, I think that's definitely going to win. But I like Zalatoris tomorrow in round three over Decky, minus 105. I like Palmer over Knox at minus 128. I like Kisri over Kuchar at plus 102. Kang, your guy, plus 230. Okay, over Siwoo Kim. I like Ortiz over Wyndham Clark at minus 138. I like Straka over Sloan at minus 117. Like, again, like the metrics that I'm seeing on Lee, I love him over Redmond at minus 117. And Bramlett over Potter. I'm fading Potter at minus 129. Those are the matchups that I'm playing heading into tomorrow. Any of those matchups, again, tickle your fancy.
There were a lot of them you mentioned, and you did mention Kang, and am I in that top 20 that I have for 8-1? That could be a heck of a score if he holds on there. One of the ones I was looking at, and you just listed about seven of them, so I don't remember them all. I like Luke List tomorrow versus Johnny Vegas. Luke List has been playing pretty well. If you look at the box score, he rolled off about five straight birdies and on the back nine today, so he's playing well. I do like your Willie Z one. I know you've been fading Hideki. He hasn't played since the Masters win. I like Willie Z, and I also was looking at some of the earlier matchups. I like Cameron Champ tomorrow to beat Satoshi Kodaira. Champ had a great round today. He was flirting with the cut line, but after going even par yesterday, he wound up shooting 6-under today to make the cut. So I do like Cameron Champ tomorrow.
Okay. Any final thoughts before we move on to some NBA? Any final thoughts in regard to golf heading into, of course, Saturday and Sunday?
I would love that. I would love to see Mark Leishman make a little run at this, and Bryson to have a good round tomorrow. But I think Sam Burns, the way he played the last 2 days, it's his to lose. I know it's obvious to say since he's the leader, but going out and firing a 62 today was quite impressive. He has the rest of the field chasing him, so we'll see what happens.
All right, let's turn our attention to what's going on in the NBA. Here on our own backyard in the New York City area, you've got the Knicks taking on Charlotte at 1 o'clock. You'll be able to listen to that again right here on 98.7 ESPN. On Sunday, they take on Boston. This is a three-team race to try to get that fourth seed so that team will host the first round of the playoffs. Atlanta takes on Houston on Sunday. Miami takes on the Bucks and Detroit. How do you see this playing out, David? Who do you think wins this fourth seed?
Well, I think it's the Hawks because they play the awful Rockets, and they right now are a half a game up against the Heat and the Knicks. So I'm going to pencil in the Hawks as getting home court advantage, the four seed. The Heat and the Knicks are tied at the 5 and 6 seed, but I think the Knicks have the easier schedule remaining. I mean, the Heat still have to play the Bucks. Obviously, the Heat have the tiebreaker, so if the Heat went out, they'll get the 5. But, you know, looking at the standings, you can't really control anything but yourself. But, you know, if you do get the Heat and Knicks, the winner of whoever finishes 5th gets the Hawks, you win that, you get the 76ers. But if you're the 6th seed, then you're going to have to face the Bucks in the first round and probably the Nets in the second round. So I don't know which one is harder. It's probably better to face the Hawks and then take your chances with a Philly team, especially if you're the Heat, and the Heat just beat up on Philly the other night. But quite honestly, Anita, you look at that Eastern Conference, and I know the play-in series is making things a little bit different this year, but I do think there's a flat line right there between the 6 teams in the East and the 4 that are in the play-in series, not just because they're in the play-in series, but I think the top 6 are significantly better than those 4. And I really honestly believe any of those top 6 can win the East. Obviously, the Nets and the Sixers are the better teams. But when it comes to the 7-game series, I mean, you watch the Heat just annihilate the Bucks last year and make the run to the finals. The Knicks are playing as well as anybody in basketball right now. The Hawks have surprised people. So I really think that East can be won by any of those 6 teams. And I'm not giving any attention to the teams in the play-in series only because I don't think they're very good. The Celtics have been fading really bad. The Pacers don't seem to really know what's going on at all. I don't have any faith in the Hornets. And any of those teams, I like the Wizards the most, but they're not going to beat the 76ers. So I really, really am eyeing the Hawks, Heat, and Knicks. I think there's value there because the top 3 teams are short prices right now with the Bucks, Nets, and 76ers. You get the Heat at 15 or 20-1, depending on your book. And it still surprised me that the Knicks are still 35-1, tied with the Celtics at 35-1. And the Knicks are heads and tails better than the Celtics.
Yeah, I think odds makers are totally underestimating this Knicks team, specifically how well their defenses have been playing and as of late, offensively, playing really well. Here's what's interesting. If the Knicks remain in the 6th spot, and you've got a Nets team, they're taking on Chicago, who's trying to get in as well. Like they have an opportunity here, you know, and they take on so the Nets take on Cleveland and Chicago. You know, there's a chance the Nets end up with the 3rd seed and will have to face the Knicks in the first round of the playoffs. Now, we know the Nets team, they're favored to win the championship 2-1. But there's only 7 games in the course of this entire season, David, that the big 3, of course, Kyrie and KD and Harden, have been on the court together. Like, don't underestimate this. Like, I just think so many – I think there's just a lot of people that are overlooking this Knicks team and just I think how well they can play. Like, I'm hoping for that series. I think that series would be fantastic.
Well, if you don't get it in the first round, you might get it in the second round. Should the Knicks, let's say they are 6 and they knock off the Bucks, you would get the Nets anyway. Of course, the Knicks could go up to the 5 and avoid that completely and have to face the 76ers. I do agree with you, though. I think the Nets, probably the most talented team in basketball, top to bottom, when all players are healthy. You can make that case for the Lakers as well with their big 2. But you're right. They've only played 7 games together, but they've also won 46 games without having those guys play together. So it's going to be an interesting postseason, one that we've, unlike anything we've seen. I thought last year was interesting just because it was played in the bubble. But we'll see what happens. I'm not sold on the Sixers either. They haven't been here before. They haven't been in a position where they've been one of the favorites. It's been a long time since they've been in this position. They really haven't won anything. Obviously, they have a coach who has done well but hasn't won anything since he took the Celtics to the promised land over a decade ago. So I really think it is wide open. A Bucks team that people are sleeping on that, you know, it was arguably the best team in basketball the last couple of years, albeit without getting to that championship round. So it'll be interesting to see because I wouldn't be surprised if any of those 6 teams wind up winning the East because if the Heat could do it last year as a 5 seed, I don't see why any of these teams couldn't do it this year.
By the way, you've got a Toronto Raptors team with a B-squad roster, okay? Johnson, Birch, Flynn, Harris, that are two points back of the Mavericks with 9 seconds left in the fourth. This very well could go into overtime, which, you know me, I'm hoping it happens, because then that gives Luka a better opportunity to nail two more three-pointers, even though he is 1 of 8. So just FYI, I know a lot of us had Dallas minus 13 and a half, and here the Raptors are just 2 shots back, or just 2 points back.
I feel your pain. The last time I bet on Luka, I took the exact same bet, and I think he went 1 of 10 from three-point land and didn't play the fourth quarter at all. So I feel your pain there.
We'll see what happens. Anyway, David, always great to hear your voice. Love when you join us on Weekend Wager. Thank you, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You too. Have a good one.
You got it. David Berman joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. I'm Anita Marks. It is Weekend Wager. And now Dallas is up by 2. So the Raptors won at 110, Dallas 112. Again, I'm hoping that this goes into overtime. Oh, it's so fun to gamble. Without further ado, Mark DiLorenzo joins us. He's with GiddyUpBets.com, founder and, of course, racing analyst. So, Mark, before we start really doing a deep dive into how you're going to be playing the Preakness tomorrow, we have to talk about Medina Spirit and Bob Baffert and, you know, what happened there. And I guess the biggest question is, you know, do you believe that Baffert's legacy has been affected by this? What are your thoughts in all that has gone down with Medina Spirit?
Yeah, you know, it's a really good question. You know, one of the things that horse racing does lack is transparency. And just like in any type of betting, gambling marketplace, if it's in stocks, bonds, horse racing, football with injuries, the way the world should work and the way that everything should be on a level playing field, where you should know what's going on with, you know, the insides of a company, the insides of a horse, the insides of a player injury before you're going to bet. Bob Baffert has had a very strong run. He has had a very strong run for two reasons. One, he's been given the best horses. So, you know, when they breed these horses, he buys, you know, the best. He has a lot of money behind him. But also, Bob Baffert's out there training these horses, and he's feeding these horses, you know, what a lot of people like to call superfeed in a way, which is, you know, it helps a horse get bigger and stronger, and it helps them recover. What he got in trouble for in the Kentucky Derby is something that I want to say every single trainer, not everyone, but I'll say the top three finishers of the Kentucky Derby. The winner was Bob Baffert. Second place was Brad Cox. Third place was Doug O'Neill. All three of those guys are very, very successful trainers. And all three of them have gotten in trouble for the same thing that Bob Baffert is doing. What my issue is with the biggest thing is that Bob Baffert, after this came out again, because he had just recently got caught using this kind of painkilling medication to kind of help a horse's joints, It's not for me to say, because I'm not the horse, if this is something that's, you know, really, really bad or nothing at all. It's definitely something. There's a rule that says you can only use a certain amount of this type of anti-inflammatory, and he used a little bit over that. It's a rule because you're not supposed to go over it. So I'm upset because it puts horse racing in a bad light, and it's a sport that I love. And he used a little bit over, but, you know, he's gotten caught with this before, and he didn't really just come out and, you know, he kind of came out and just tried to make a little bit of a mockery of it. And it kind of disappointed me in a way for someone like him that's, you know, a kind of a pillar and is supposed to be, you know, an ambassador of the sport, which upset me. So am I betting the race this weekend any differently because of it? No, not really. I'll kind of get into that later. But this is something that's, you know, has been going on. The horse racing is much cleaner of a sport than it was maybe 10 years ago, but there are still things that are going on there that that need to be cleaned up. And hopefully going down the road, this is something that really is kind of a statement point where we could kind of, you know, get some more advanced, commissioner and more advanced, you know, penalties for these guys that do get in trouble to, you know, help the sport go forward, you know, going into the future.
You know, to me, it's kind of like, you know, Bob Baffert, a lot of people feel, you know, the best trainer in the history of horse racing, or definitely up there in the top three, top five. Kind of reminds me, you know, Bill Belichick. A lot of us think that Bill Belichick is the best coach in the NFL. And then, you know, when he's out there, right?
Who's also gotten caught cheating a lot of times.
Exactly, exactly. That's what.
And I can't sit here and tell you that what Bob Baffert's doing is right. That is wrong. But what Bob Baffert is doing is what a lot of other guys are doing, and there's certain limitations of what he could be doing. So, and he's getting caught for this, and he keeps getting caught, and he has the audacity to kind of say, well, this guy did this, or some guy peed on the hay, and that's where he really drives me wrong. But just like Bill Belichick takes every inch that you can possibly give him, he's going to take. He's going to tape people. They're going to deflate balls. He's going to get in trouble for, you know, talking to players prior to anything else. The top three trainers in the Kentucky Derby they're going to take every possible inch they can get. And it's kind of, you know, horse racing. The top three finishers in the Kentucky Derby, including Bob Baffert, I think the misconception is that they, like, drug these horses with something very bad and, you know, like something that might have been done, you know, a while ago, which maybe still gets done in small pockets, but did not happen. This was more of a case where they gave the horse an anti-inflammatory, some type of medicine. I'm not a veterinarian to give you the exact details, but it was kind of to relieve a horse to have a little bit of stress on one of its legs. So, again, it's sad, and I've kind of become a little ticked off at him about how he's gone about this since then, but really he couldn't have gone about it any differently if he wanted his two horses to run in the Preakness this weekend. So we're here, and, you know, I'm still going to love the sport. I still do. But, again, like I said, I hope this is kind of a starting point of making some adjustments and some changes and getting more of a regulatory board, because horse racing does not have a commissioner like the NFL has Roger Goodell or the NHL has Gary Bettman. There is no commissioner in horse racing. That is something that is needed. The minute that happens and the whole country is under one type of surveillance, one type of a commissioner to make rules, actions, suspensions, and changes, it's going to get better. And I think that this might lead to that.
Again, Mark DeLorenzo is joining us from GiddyUpBets.com, founder and racing analyst. With that being said, let's dive into how you are going to be playing the Preakness, sir. And let's talk about one horse in particular, Keep Me In Mind. Now, this is a horse, again, you were part of our ABR preview show for the Kentucky Derby, and both you and Dan Torgman liked this horse in the Derby. Before you start talking about why you like him so much this coming Sunday or this coming Saturday for the Preakness, what happened in the Derby that did not allow this horse, I want to believe, to race as well as you expected him to then?
Yeah. So in the Kentucky Derby, when I came on your show during Derby Day that day, I thought that this horse had a definite chance to get involved in the race and maybe could win at what was going to be 70-1 odds. What had happened in the Kentucky Derby, which I could kind of, you know, break down real quick, is that Medina Spirit, the Bob Baffert horse, did win, and Medina Spirit caught every break in the race. The horse that I liked the most in the Kentucky Derby, Rock Your World, broke slow, leaving Medina Spirit on the front end, going a little bit slow of a pace, so it was able to last longer. Both Rocky World and this horse that you just mentioned, who I'm going to be betting in the Preakness, which is number two, Keep Me In Mind, trained by Robertino Diodoro, David Cohen. This horse in the Kentucky Derby broke slow as well. It was very far back. It traveled very well in the internal fractions of the race. So I kind of like to see how horses start. You know, in the middle of the race, it gets a little bit lost, and at the end. And I thought that this horse ran a little covered up, sneaky well in the Kentucky Derby. The reason that I liked the horse in the Kentucky Derby was that during the winter, when all of these horses had a very strict training regimen, every 7 weeks they were training, working out, this horse was in Oaklawn Park, and this horse was in the barn and was just not able to train properly, had a couple physical issues, so it ran a few times during the winter and spring, and it didn't look great from just watching the races and not knowing that the horse had a training pattern that was just wrong. And I think this horse is coming around into form. It ran better than it looks in the Kentucky Derby. I think you're going to get 15-20-1 again in the Preakness. So I still think that there's value in this race, and I think this horse is going to get more pace to run into because there's two Bob Baffert horses in this race. So the front-end horses are going to, you know, they're going to go a little bit quicker, giving this horse a little bit more of a chance to close down the lane, and hopefully I'll be screaming for a big score Saturday around 6 o'clock.
Yeah, 15-1. That would be a big score. All right, some of the other horses that you are eyeing on this card as well, let's talk about Crowded Trade, a Chad Brown horse. What do you like about this one?
Yeah, Crowded Trade, Chad Brown horse. He's a big physical, long striding, very nice looking horse. He ran better than it looked last time out. He was on the part of the track that was against the bias. He ran very well last time. First time out in his career, he really caught my eye, being a horse that could really, I thought would be a horse that would really like, you know, the Preakness distance, which is a mile and 3/16, which is a little bit shorter than the Kentucky Derby. So what Chad Brown kind of decided to do was to skip the Kentucky Derby because that was a longer distance for a little bit shorter of a distance for this race. The horse draws down on the inside. It's going to be about 10-1. I'm not in love with the horse. I'm not going to bet this horse to win, but I think it's a horse that you should probably consider if you're playing exactus trifectas. I think it's going to be, it's going to hit the board, I guess you could say, in my eyes, and is a horse that I think that is going to, again, offer value at the 10-1 morning line.
Let's talk about the 10 horse concert tour. A lot of people like this horse prior to the draw where he did get the 10 post, and a lot of people, from what I understand, a lot of analysts are now kind of fading this horse because of that post spot. Are you as well?
I don't have an issue with the post because the horse has very quick early foot, very quick out of the gate. He's going to be able to cross over and get to a good position going into the first turn, so won't lose ground, which is very, very important. The issue with this horse is that the other Bob Baffert horse in the race also has speed. That's the Kentucky Derby winner, Medina Spirit. Those two horses are, you know, it's so tough to judge because you have the two Bob Baffert horses that, you know, how the race will exactly shape up early. But I don't love this horse because this horse is another horse that doesn't really want to go this long. Last time out, this horse ran, and late in the race, he got a little leg weary. And, you know, he's going a longer distance than that race. I prefer this horse over the Kentucky Derby winner in Medina Spirit just because this horse is coming in a little bit more fresh. I think this horse is a little bit faster out of the gate than Medina Spirit, so it should be on the lead. I think this horse could definitely hit the board. I think this horse could win. You're going to get a decent price because the Kentucky Derby winner always takes more money than anybody else in the race. So that kind of happens 9 out of 10 times. So Concert Tour is a horse that I think is a worthy contender. It's a horse that I'll be using on my horizontal tickets, like pick fours, pick five parlays. But I'm not in love with it at short price.
Okay, I'm waiting. Like you're liking a few of these horses. I haven't heard you fall in love with one of them. What are your thoughts about Midnight Bourbon? We all like bourbon, and we all like drinking bourbon at midnight.
There's nothing better than a good bourbon at midnight. That's for sure. So Midnight Bourbon is getting a big jockey change. Irad Ortiz is now riding Midnight Bourbon. Irad Ortiz is pretty much the best jockey in the country right now. He should have this horse more forwardly placed, getting first jump on the Bob Baffert horses. If this horse is a good price at around 6, 7, 8-1, I think that that's value. Just like when you're betting on sports, or at least I know when I am, like at a certain point, if you're betting a football spread, you know, you might like a team that's, you know, at -6 or -6.5. But then once you go over the hook and you go to 7, 7.5, or when a team goes from -2 to -3.5, or when a money line goes from at -180, I might see value in the Yankees tonight, but at -220, I don't. This is the type of horse that I think that this race is a competitive race. So if you were to get value on a horse like Midnight Bourbon, I couldn't tell you not to bet this horse. I think he has a chance to win. But the horse that I like the most in the race is #2, Keep Me In Mind. That's the horse I'm going to be betting to win. I think I'm going to get 15+1, which is the right price. And, you know, I'll probably bet him to win and to place, so to finish in first or second. You know, if you were to bet $100 on the horse to win, you're going to get back about $1,500, $1,600. I think that that's good value.
Last one I want to tee up for you is Unbridled Honor, Todd Pletcher's horse. Could this be – it's unbelievable. We know how great of a trainer Pletcher is, and he still hasn't won the Preakness. This is another horse, 15-1. Any thoughts on Unbridled Honor pulling an upset?
Yeah, Unbridled Honor improved a lot on speed figures last time out, showed a real nice burst to get up down on a part of the track that wasn't playing well, which I would call a dead rail bias. It ran very well last time. It improved a lot. It's going to have to improve again to win in this race. I think that, you know, he's another in a race that sometimes in horse racing, you know, there's 13 races on Preakness Day. There are a few races where there's one or two horses that I really stick out and I really love. The Preakness this year, I like keeping in mind. I think that a couple of these have a chance, and because of everything that's going on with Baffert, it makes it a very confusing race. But if you're looking to get involved, looking for action, number 8, Unbridled Honor, Todd Pletcher, the Hall of Fame trainer. I think this horse, you know, it also could get involved. I couldn't really talk you off of this horse. A few of the horses I don't like in the race would be number 1, Ram. Number 6, Rombauer is kind of looked at as a little bit as a wise guy horse. Coming in fresh, has been training well. I just have never loved this horse going a longer distance. The 7 is a horse coming in from Dubai that ran in Dubai last time, ran pretty well. He maybe could get involved. He'll be 30-40-1. Chad Brown has another horse, and number 9, Risk Taking, is another one that I'm not really in love with. So, you know, that's kind of the full field. But again, the horse that I like the most that I'm going to bet is number 2, Keep Me in Mind.
So awesome having, again, Mark DiLorenzo join us, giddyupbets.com founder and racing analyst. Just to recap what he said, Keep Me in Mind, the 2 horse, this is who he likes. He likes at 15-1 odds, man, you know, why not to win and also to win in place. I'm also, so that's how I'm going to follow his lead. He is the expert. That's how I'm going to play this race. I'm also going to play a few exacta boxes, maybe some trifecta as well, and some of the other horses that he had mentioned that I like as well. And that's crowded trade, which is the 4 horse, Concert Tour, which is the 10 horse. Obviously you want to put in Medina Spirit. You know, I know a lot of controversy there, and I've heard some people say, well, I'm not going to bet Medina Spirit because this is a horse that's you know, doping or using performance-enhancing drugs. You know, don't cut off your nose to spite your face. Medina Spirit, I have a feeling, is going to be, you know, towards the front when they reach the finish line. So make sure you throw that 3 horse into an exact or a trifecta box that you might be utilizing. Midnight Bourbon, the 5 horse. I do like risk taking. That's the 9 horse as well. And Unbridled Honor, this Pletcher horse, a lot of people like this Unbridled Honor, which is 8th horse as well. So just a few ways that I'll be playing the Preakness race tomorrow. All right. Well, that does it for us. I want to thank Christian Winfield from the New York Daily News, who joined us earlier on the show. Talking all things Knicks and Nets as we get closer to the postseason. There's a lot of futures bets out there that you could dive into. Also, David Berman joined us live on the show, talking all things golf. The Byron Nelson taking place right now, and this is kind of the warm-up for next week. Really excited about it with the PGA Championship, major number 2 of this season's golf year, which is really exciting. Of course, again, Mark DiLorenzo, who just joined us to give us our Preakness preview. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. We're here with you every Friday night, schedule permitting, and Week in Wager brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk, believe in your game, believe in your bet, BetMGM Sports, right here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.